satisfy your celluloid addiction with the Cinema Junkie podcast, where you can mainline film with the people who make them, as well as those who love them, program them, and celebrate them for their cultural impact. Listen to Cinema Junkie wherever you get your podcasts.
Good morning, I'm Lawrence K. Jackson. It's Friday, June 19th. A new survey looks into the impact of the Islamic Center of San Diego shooting on the community's sense of safety. More on that next, but first, the headlines. Metered parking in downtown San Ysidro starts July 1st. The city started installing the metered parking spaces this week and will continue through the end of the month. Once they're done, there will be a total of 286 metered parking spaces in the area. It will be $2.50 per hour with a four-hour limit, Monday through Saturday from 8 a.m. to 6 p.m. The city's goal is to increase the overall amount of available parking in the San Ysidro Business District and to generate revenue. The interim director for the city's transportation department says that feeding parking meters feeds neighborhood repairs. The California Association of Realtors says that despite home sales slowing down in May, the average home price in the county still remains above the $1 million mark. The median price for a single-family home in the county for the month of May was $1.059 million. It was roughly $930,000 for the state as a whole. The president of the CA Realtors Association says that home sales slowed in May because of economic uncertainty, while adding that the recent easing in mortgage rates is, quote, an encouraging development. San Diego International Airport's Terminal 1 has been named one of the world's most beautiful airports. The honor comes by way of French architectural and design program Pre-Versailles. Only two U.S.-based airports made this year's list. The program recognizes, quote, outstanding contemporary architecture and design and aims to promote what the design firm calls intelligent sustainability. From KPBS, you're listening to San Diego News Now. Stay with me for more of the local news you need.
Most stories do not start with a journalist. They start with people noticing when a river runs dry, asking why a school is changing, discovering something new next door. Curiosity is human. Your right to keep asking questions is at the heart of NPR's mission, and we are not going anywhere.
It's been a month since the shooting at the Islamic Center of San Diego. Reporter Elaine Alfaro says the results of a new survey show the impact on the Muslim community's sense of belonging and safety in San Diego.
Nearly 9 in 10 Muslims in San Diego say they feel less safe in their communities since the shooting that killed 3 people. That's according to a survey of more than 300 local Muslim adults conducted by UC San Diego's U.S. Immigration Policy Center over the past month. Imam Taha Hassan is the director of the Islamic Center of San Diego. He spoke with KPBS Midday Edition on Wednesday. He says the attack underscores the threat of rising Muslim hate in the U.S.
It's not something that happened, out of nothing. It is just a demonstration, unfortunately, of the hate against the Muslim community that we have experienced for so long.
Tazeen Nizam is the executive director of the Council on American Islamic Relations, or CARE.
And this is an indication to our law enforcement and to our elected officials that it is time for them to step up, step in, take stock of all of these feelings, and act accordingly.
Nizam said CARE is also collecting data on the online hateful speech following the shooting. Elaine Alfaro, KPBS News.
San Diego's city budget will dedicate tens of millions of dollars to repairing city roads over the next year. Public Matters reporter Jake Gatta tells us that's not nearly enough to maintain the city's vast network of streets that are only getting worse.
San Diego's roads are crumbling faster than the city can fix them. The Transportation Department says it needs $1.8 billion over 10 years to keep the network in acceptable condition. Mayor Todd Gloria said multiple times during the budget process that fixing the roads was a priority, but But recent budgets have been far short of what the transportation department says it needs. Long term, that means a crumbling network that will only cost more to fix in the future. Former San Diego City Planning Director Bill Fulton said a big problem is the city's low-density neighborhoods.
When you have a sprawling city, the math doesn't add up between the amount of tax revenue coming in and the amount of money that has to go out the door for services.
That low density also makes other options besides driving more difficult. So what can be done? Shane Phillips with the UCLA Luskin School of Public Affairs says building more homes around the infrastructure we do have would help.
We're not talking high-rise housing necessarily, just denser than 5 homes an acre or something like that that you'll often see in suburbs.
San Diego is building a lot of homes in its urban core, but expanding that sort of development to other neighborhoods hasn't happened yet. Jake Gatta, KPBS News.
For months, San Diego's bicycle racing community has been dealing in controversy surrounding the inclusion of transgender athletes. Metro reporter Andrew Bowen says the city's premier bike racing organization is reversing course.
The San Diego Velodrome is a bicycle racetrack in Balboa Park. In April, it hosted a race that was certified by USA Cycling, the national governing body for bike racing. Last year, USA Cycling adopted a policy that excludes trans women from women's races. This sparked an outcry from trans cyclists and their allies at the Velodrome. They argued collaboration with USA Cycling made the Velodrome complicit in transphobia. No trans riders were turned away at the April race, and supporters of USA Cycling said they just want more opportunities to take part in the national competitive circuit. On Sunday, the Velodrome Association board failed to agree on a plan to continue USA Cycling races. That means those races are finished, at least through the end of the year. Velodrome member Cole Hansen said he's pleased.
I think there's a lot of work to do to make sure that everyone understands why this was so important to a lot of the community, and not to leave a schism in the community.
Studies have found trans women who take gender-affirming hormone therapy have no competitive advantage in sports and have similar strength and endurance to cisgender women. Andrew Bowen, KPBS News.
Next week, Onstage Playhouse opens Isaac's Eye, a play about renowned 17th century scientist Isaac Newton and an experiment involving a very large needle. Arts reporter Beth Accomando stopped by a rehearsal to learn more.
At Onstage Playhouse on Wednesday night, it was hard not to notice the 12-inch upholstery needle prominently sitting on the table at rehearsal. The clue to its purpose lies in the title of the play, Isaac's Eye.
Well, it's eye singular because he only jams a needle into one of his eyes.
That's certainly attention-grabbing. In fact, playwright Lucas Nath couldn't forget about it after listening to an NPR story on the 10 greatest experiments, one of which involved 17th-century scientist Isaac Newton, explains James P. Darvis.
He finished that segment, was walking home in New York, and this insanely beautiful, fantastical, somewhat fact-based world started populating his head, and he wrote this wonderful play.
Darvis, who's both the artistic director of Onstage Playhouse and the director of Isaac's Eye, says Nath pits Newton against fellow scientist Robert Hooke.
The story is Isaac writes to Robert Hooke, who's a member of the Royal Society. And young Isaac Newton feels he has to become a member of the Royal Society in order to have his brilliance recognized, certified, and published.
You could call the play a creative experiment in which Nath mixes truth with fiction and then steps back to see what happens.
Our story starts with a character by the name of the actor. He addresses the audience and he talks about how Isaac Newton believed there was ether everywhere. And because he believed that ether was everywhere, he was able to believe in things that weren't really there.
It is not real. Either is not a thing.
Explains Julian Flores, the actor playing the actor. He also plays the dying man named Sam, who stands in for the common folk.
Those people who are not exactly in the highest ranks of society, but their existence, their humanity, is something that this play highlights.
It's a humanity the scientists overlook.
Robert Hooke, as he's traveling, runs into the dying man named Sam, who is poor, less than human, and he's dying of the plague on the side of the road. And Robert Hooke goes, ah, this is the person we can do the experiment on. And they bring him to Isaac's house, and they jam a needle in his eye.
Feels like the needle might just pop my eyeball.
I'm talking about what you see, not what you feel.
I don't understand the difference, I say.
I don't think he's very good at this.
He says?
I doesn't seem to be having any trouble. Are you having any trouble, Sam?
He's not being very descriptive. I think we need someone smarter.
Smarter?
I'm not very smart.
You know, I'm just trying to keep up here. This is a pretty unusual situation.
Okay, I think we have what we need.
Tom Stewart plays Hook and says the play is about ambition.
At the center of it are these two incredibly ambitious men. And I think it connects with a lot of people trying to decide, you know, what's my identity? Is it what I do for a job? Is it my personal life? And both Robert Hooke and Isaac Newton are being kind of pulled in two different directions in terms of, do you want to be happy or do you want to be successful?
Max Bergstrand plays Newton.
The two things that are the core tenets of this play are love and legacy. And we see how that works for each of the characters, what they love and what they want to be remembered by.
Hooke has largely been forgotten outside the scientific community, while Newton remains widely known, if only for the story about an apple hitting him on his head. The play's historical fiction suggests a reason why.
Any suspicion you might have that Isaac Newton was involved in writing Robert Hooke out of history, it's kind of where the playwright's going, but what it's doing with it is completely fantastical, and thankfully the playwright is playful and honest about that.
The play leaves audiences to reach their own conclusions. To help them decide, everything that's true in the play is written on the theater walls. So in this experiment, the audience becomes the unknown factor, reacting differently every night. Beth Accomando, KPBS News.
Tens of thousands of race fans will descend on Coronado this weekend. The Andrill 250 is San Diego's first NASCAR race and the sport's first on a military base. Military reporter Andrew Dyer says it's among the biggest events you're likely to see at the base, and Caltrans recommends planning accordingly.
Crews continue to build the race course and support structures for the three races Friday through Sunday. It's the first time NASCAR has raced on a military base, a challenge not just for racers, but for sailors too.
You know, these guys didn't ask for this event, but they have embraced it wholly as their own.
Amy Lupo is NASCAR's track president for the race. She says Navy crews have been helping to make sure the base is ready for the weekend. Air operations are canceled, but elsewhere, normal Navy business continues at the base.
The lieutenant who's in charge of security for the base said, you guys did such a great job in paving that now we have sailors thinking they're driving the NASCAR track and really speeding through that area. So I think maybe our team did too good of a job.
Caltrans is warning motorists not attending the race to avoid Coronado altogether this weekend. It expects long delays on the San Diego Coronado Bridge and says spillover traffic could also impact the 5 between the 8 and State Route 905. Andrew Dyer, KPBS News.
If NASCAR isn't your thing, we have some more weekend event ideas for you. To commemorate Juneteenth 2026, the Juneteenth Community Block Party takes place today from noon through 6 p.m. in North Park. The corner of Louisiana Street and University Ave will be filled with music, vendors, good vibes, and more. And later in the day at 5 p.m. on Market Street, Quartz Yard is hosting an R&B block party. Tickets for that event can be found online. The Times of San Diego says that La Jolla's Museum of Contemporary Art is also offering one-day free admission for the holiday as well. You could check out Giants, art from the Dean Collection of Swiss Beats and Alicia Keys for free. On Saturday, there are still a number of ways to celebrate Juneteenth, or you could spend a day at the park in Chula Vista. It's a free event that takes place at Chula Vista's Bayfront Park and features kid-friendly activities, a car show, and live entertainment. And on Sunday, be sure to celebrate the father figures in your life. Whatever you do this weekend, please enjoy. That's it for the podcast today. This podcast is edited by Brooke Ruth and hosted and produced by me, Lawrence K. Jackson. As always, you can find more San Diego news online at kpbs.org. Thanks for listening and have a great weekend.
Mm-hmm. Most stories do not start with a journalist. They start with people noticing when a river runs dry, asking why a school is changing, discovering something new next door. Curiosity is human. Your right to keep asking questions is at the heart of NPR's mission, and we are not going anywhere.